This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, such a clutch offseason pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Kamala Harris committed to strengthening legal immigration.
So I think he meant to say legal immigration there, but last night Joe Biden was really honestly singing mostly Joe Biden's praises for the last 4 years that he was in office and 50 years that he's been in D.C. And we're supposed to look at what Kamala Harris is going to bring to the Oval Office, even though she's been there and brags about being the last person in the room for most major decisions. We're supposed to be looking at the border like now that Kamala's in charge, things are going to be different. Well, I've got a tweet here, and it's from Chad Wolf, and Chad Wolf knows a bit about the border. He's a former DHS acting secretary. And the first thing that he highlights from the Kamala Harris plan, should she become the president, is that her plan is to provide a pathway to citizenship for more than 15 million illegal aliens, including aliens who were previously deported during the Trump administration. What happens next? Can we possibly fix this problem? Let's ask our friend Jim Carafano, who joins us once again. He's a senior counselor to the president and E.W. Richardson Fellow for International Engagement at the Heritage Foundation. Jim, welcome back to the show. Always good to speak with you.
All I have to say is that if gaslighting contributed to global warming, we'd all be fried eggs by now.
Good point. I mean, I have to remind myself all the time that when we look at what the other side is doing that disagrees with ourselves, that you have to remember they're not trying to solve the same problems that we are, which is why their solutions don't look like solutions. What's the problem that the Harris ticket here is looking to solve on our southern border, and what isn't it?
Yeah, well, so number one is, and we should be clear about this, and Chad is exactly right, their solution to America's border and immigration policy starts with mass amnesty. Not securing the border, not dealing with the cartels, not deporting people, not enforcing the law. It starts with the mass amnesty. Here's the second thing that we know. Even when we suggest mass amnesty in the United States, illegal immigration increases. So this idea is that we clear the decks, right, and then we can secure the border. This is nonsense. It's not just nonsense in the United States. Every country in the world that has implemented a mass amnesty campaign to deal with illegal immigration winds up with more illegal immigration after than it started. So, one, that's the plan. Two, absolutely 1,000%, 1 million guarantee that the plan won't work. We even tried it in the United States when Ronald Reagan was president. The illegal population tripled after he declared amnesty and promised to secure the border and deport illegal aliens. But here's the third thing. This is so not a new idea. Reagan tried it and failed, which is why nobody talked about it for like 20 years. Bush tried it after 9/11. Obama tried it. And So we've actually had in the last 20 years mass amnesty proposed by Republican presidents with Republican Congresses, Republican presidents with Democratic Congresses, Democratic presidents with Democratic congressmen, and Democratic presidents with Republican congresses. So in every possible political combination in the last 20 years, it's always been rejected. There is no mass political support for mass amnesty. So the odds that a future administration could do this are zero. So that is, if there's a definition of gaslighting, it's basically saying I have a problem. I have a solution to deal with this problem, when we factually know, one, their answer won't work, and two, implementing it would be almost impossible.
Jim Carafano with us right now on the Annie Fry Show. I feel like the problem that we consistently see on the left with the people who are in power right now, the problem is always a political problem, and the solution is always an immediate solution to the current political problem, and then whatever happens after that, we'll get to it when we get to it, which makes the entire apparatus seem like it's in complete disarray. Foreign or national, it seems like everything is a mess. And if every time we watch them turn around, they have a different policy position. It's hard to reconcile that they're both coming from the same place. And it's a little scary to think that if they were to win this next election, that this is the way they could continue on making policy just by the political wins and the shifts of those wins.
Look, I say this not as a partisan voice, because I'm not a Republican and I'm not a Democrat. I'm sorry I've said that so many times in your show, but there's a clear distinction between Democratic, liberal and conservative policy. Liberal policy is the best thing for America is if I am in power. And therefore the best policies are the ones that keep me in power. Period. Mic drop. End of statement. That's why we are where we are. Conservative policies are exactly opposite. It is my job is to figure out what Americans really want and deliver it to them. Period. Mic drop. End of statement. It's exactly opposite. One wants power because they believe they are the most qualified to rule. The other wants power because they believe the people are the most qualified to make decisions on how they want to live their lives. If that sounds partisan or cruel to you, I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. And policies, just like you described, are illustrative to that. It's, how could Harris, for example, oppose the childhood tax credit and then now want to give a bigger childhood tax credit than Republicans, because they think they're enunciating a policy that will help them keep political power.
Mm. Speaking with Jim Carafano, I've been watching bits and pieces a lot through at my X feed, watched some of the speeches last night at the Democrat convention in Chicago. And I bet you've seen some of the protests that are taking place outside of the convention. And you've also read about the policies that are being advocated for inside of the convention. And, when you hear people in the streets really actually vocally supporting Hamas and championing October 7th. I mean, I've heard it from their own mouths and on videos. But then you hear the trying to split hairs inside the convention. I'm wondering which one you think is more dangerous to our future. What's going on outside the convention or what's going on inside?
Well, both. And I say this as this comes from my heart and it's genuine concern. If you were asking me today what really worries me for the future, what I pray to God about to fix more than anything else, it's not nuclear war, it's not World War III, it's not Ukraine or China or even the debt or woke or anything. It's that we only have two political parties in this country, major political parties. That's not going to change. One of them is tolerant of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. And I think that is poison in the bloodstream of America. There's a reason why the left, when Trump was running for president and when he was president, and even now, keep attacking him as a white supremacist and as anti-Semitic. Right? These are common tropes that they always, and there's a reason for that. Not because they're true, because they're not, but because there are things that are fundamentally hateful to Americans. That is symptoms of the most corrupt fascist regimes in humanity. To be anti-Semitic is like the worst thing you can imagine. And yet we have a political party that is going out of its way to be tolerant of people who clearly hate Jews and clearly want to destroy Israel. So the same people that have bought billions of dollars to save Ukraine want to turn around and do everything they possibly can to destroy another free country. How is that even rational?
What is that sentiment allowed to foment in, like, on stateside, in our neighborhoods here in this country? What has that gotten us?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know how to put this. You know, it's kind of like, what's the real kind of thing that, you know, breaks the dam, for example, on sexual morality in the United States? And it has to be pedophilia, right? I mean, so this is the equivalent, the moral equivalent to that. You know, basically saying Jew hating is okay, it is crossing a line that makes anything permissible. And for people who think that are marching for this stuff in the street, you know, the people that embrace the philosophy of Jew hate, which they're not tolerant of LGBTQ. They're not tolerant of women's rights. So you are literally championing the people who would be the first to take every liberty that you enjoy away from you.
Yeah.
This is really, really bad. I mean, I cannot tell you how really bad this is. And look, I'm not denying that there aren't anti-Semitic fanatics, you know, all over the country. But when a major political party has to find space for that, I mean, like I said, there's a reason why the left attacked Republicans on this issue. You know, I got to be honest. I mean, conservatives haven't always been vocal on dealing with anti-Semitism or anti-Zionism, which is, you know, the destruction of Israel. And the reason why is we argue about the things we disagree on.
Yeah.
Right? We argue about things that other people get wrong. If you're doing something, we don't care. Right? If you're doing something right, then we don't talk about that. So we don't talk about what we agree with liberals on. Nuts, right? And so we've been too quiet too long on this issue, not because we're sympathetic. I mean, look at every person who put a conservative label on their nameplate, who then becomes a declared anti-Semitic or anti-Zionist. Look at how quickly, I'm not going to name names, but look at how quickly they've been marginalized and discarded by the conservative movement.
Yeah, amen to that.
You know, I'm not going to name names, but
right.
our movement, though, is we haven't stood up, not because we're tolerant of anti-Semitism. It's because we just never thought it was a serious problem. It's just like conservatives speaking out against, pedophilia. It's not that we don't think that's an abhorrent crime beyond all measure. It's just who is saying that it's okay,
yeah.
Right?
The questions have such obvious answers, you don't realize you have to speak them out loud for people to hear because you assume that they are understood. You know, Jim, I want to ask you one last question before we let you go, because I feel like this is all swirling around the question that everybody has got lingering in the back of their mind, and that's about being safe in our own country. And with the anger and the hate that is taking place, I mean, there are people chanting outside the Democrat convention saying they are going to bring the war home, and talking about bringing the war here to our country. And you've been saying for a long time that another 9/11 is imminent almost. You still feel that way? What do you want Americans to understand about this moment?
No, I think and it's the same thing with hate. You know, we've got all this thing. Well, we need hate crimes. We have to protect, you know, you name your minority and everything else. But the reality is the hate crimes against Jews in America have skyrocketed in unprecedented numbers. And nobody is concerned about that. When they asked Biden about what are you going to do about hate crimes in America, he said, well, we have to do a better job combating Islamophobia. When, you know, that's not the problem. I hate all hate, right? I don't like any of that stuff. But they're attacking Jews in unprecedented numbers in America, and nothing else even comes close. and no, and they don't care. That is the reddest of the red flags that you could ever possibly imagine. So when you have spiraling numbers of, you know, a border opening up a pathway for terrorism, you're opening up the gate, the floodgates for hate crimes. Why are we shocked? I mean, this is really, I mean, you know me, I'm the optimist. I'm the guy that always says, yeah, we can fix these things.
Yeah.
If the party that represents 50% of this country embraces anti-Semitism, we do not have a fixable problem.
Well, you said it correctly earlier in your comments where you talk about what you pray about at night. And that's what people need to take away, because I think that's maybe that's where we're all supposed to be headed to anyway. So, Jim, we love you. Thank you for being with us again today.
Right. Thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye. Jim Carafano, the senior counselor to the president and E.W. Richardson Fellow for International Engagement at the Heritage Foundation, with wise advice, maybe not advice that he was intending to give, but some that I will take is what he prays about at night. Don't forget that all of this that we're discussing right now, you can take it. You can take that into prayer. You can take it into your thoughts and into, you know, whatever it is that you do to center yourself. And for me, it's my Christian faith. I encourage you to dabble if you're interested in it. There's a lot ahead of us. And I do pray every day that those predictions that Jim Carafano has been making on the show are wrong. And I fear that they could be right. So there's so much at stake. And you knew that already. The YouTube live chat poll for today is, are you watching the DNC convention? Yes. No, but you're interested in highlights, or no, you're not interested at all. I would really love to know where you were at on this convention and the coverage of it. Are you curious? Like, you know, just even a little bit of curious as to what Joe Biden might have to say. I think Barack Obama is talking tonight, or Michelle, or I don't know who's talking when. I'll get there when I get there. But what's your interest level? You go to the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Come vote in the poll today. Leave a comment if you so choose, and we will highlight those throughout the course of the show. We appreciate everybody visiting with us there. When we come back, Andy McCarthy, haven't spoke with him for a while. He was like an everyday request for us during all of Donald Trump's legal concerns. And those are kind of coming back into the fray here. He's a contributing editor at National Review. He's a Fox News contributor as well. And Donald Trump's sentencing is less than a month away with Judge Mershon in that Manhattan case. Is he going to go to jail? Andy McCarthy has made a pretty bold statement about whether or not he thinks that jail sentencing is around the corner. Let's talk.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
You fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Talk to him about it when we come back.
Well, I mean, Trump certainly hasn't done anything to win favor from Judge Mershon. I think Judge Mershon is in a mood to do him any special favors, but he'll look at it, dispassionately, as his admirers have said he has done throughout this entire process, and he'll make his own decision. Obviously, being sentenced before the election, September 18th would be just 8 days after the first debate with Kamala Harris, and just as early voting is getting started. That would obviously not be, what any candidate would want, but he's going to try to turn it to his advantage. He's going to try to use that as an example once again for his base of persecution and grievance, how he has been unfairly targeted in his view by the justice system.
Peter Baker from the New York Times reacting to the September 18th date that is coming up quickly upon us, less than a month away, where Donald Trump could be sentenced to prison. And Andy McCarthy has spoken out on this and said that we should prepare ourselves for Donald Trump to be sentenced to prison. So we wanted to talk to him about that and see where he is on that currently. He's a contributing editor at National Review. He is also a Fox News contributor. We are grateful to have him back with us. Andy, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you.
Annie, nice to be with you.
So you wrote this article on Fox News, this opinion article, telling us to be prepared. What do you want people to know about Judge Mershon, the sentencing date that's coming up, and what Donald Trump's future might look like?
Well, there's new developments on that, Annie, just within the last day that we should probably talk about, and that is that the district attorney has now conceded that Trump is correct, that he would have a right to appeal any decision that Judge Mershon makes on immunity. Trump has asked for the court to throw out his guilty verdicts based on the Supreme Court's immunity ruling from July. As I pointed out in a column last week, there's no law enforcement or judicial-based reason why Trump should be sentenced on September 18th, which is the 2 days after early voting begins in Pennsylvania, which is the key state in the election, according to most informed analysts. And now it looks like Bragg is admitting that even if Mershon rules against Trump on his immunity claim, Trump would have a right to appeal that in advance of being sentenced. And it therefore looks more likely, even though the judge hasn't acted on this yet, it seems to me likely that the sentencing will be postponed.
You know, it's been so interesting during all of these charges against Donald Trump, but this one specifically, how important the clock and the timeline is as to how justice is going to be served. Because, of course, with the November 5th election day, but of course, early voting starting much earlier in front of it, there are questions as to whether or not, if you get past Election Day and Donald Trump wins the presidency, what happens to these things after the fact. My understanding is, too, that there was a request for sentencing to be delayed beyond the election as well. Do you feel like it's likely that Mershon is going to push all of this to end up being beyond the election after all?
I don't think he has any choice. It's not what they want to do. You know, what Bragg has tried to suggest here is that the problem is tiny here compared to, say, the immunity issue in the Washington federal case, because that case is almost exclusively built on Trump's activities as president, whereas at least ostensibly the New York state case is based on private actions. But knowing what he knew, which is that all this litigation was happening in the Supreme Court, I think Bragg recklessly and Judge Merchan somewhat cluelessly allowed the district attorney's office to offer a lot of evidence at the trial that involved and implicated Trump's official activities as president, to the point that Bragg even subpoenaed and therefore compelled the testimony of two of Trump's White House staffers, whose testimony was exclusively about activities that Trump undertook while he was president. I think it was a reckless thing for them to do when they knew that this issue was being considered by the Supreme Court, and when Trump had asked for the trial to be delayed so that the judge would have the benefit of the Supreme Court's thinking on this issue before forging ahead with the trial. But they pell-mell went ahead, and now Bragg has to concede, even though he's trying to minimize the problem, that they did offer evidence that is illegal under the Supreme Court's immunity ruling. Bragg's now trying to say that it's probably just harmless error, but in point of fact, when they were arguing to the jury, the prosecutors from Bragg's office said that the evidence that they had presented along these lines was, and this is a quote, utterly devastating. So it's hard to imagine how you can now say that something is harmless error that you told the jury was a big deal when the trial was going on.
Andy McCarthy with us right now, Fox News contributor, former chief assistant U.S. attorney as well, contributing editor at the National Review. If all of that is to be applied to this particular case, and the immunity ruling by the Supreme Court is now a major factor in evidence that was entered in to get to that conviction that Donald Trump now very excitedly wears, if you ask the Democrats, because they can't have a conversation without saying the words convicted felon. Does that result in a retrial? Do we have to go through all of this again? What would the natural conclusion be if we find out some of these things need to be pulled out and the conviction wouldn't stand?
Well, Bragg's taking the position. Let me spell out what the two sides are saying. Bragg is taking the position that what we're dealing with here is not a profound immunity issue like in the Washington federal case, where Trump is basically saying he's immune from being charged with those crimes based on his activities as president. Here, this is the derivative immunity issue that comes out in the Supreme Court's opinion. Remember, what the Supreme Court says in the new immunity ruling is that not only are presidents immune from being charged with crimes that are wholly based on their activities as president, derivatively, you also, as a prosecutor, can't offer evidence of the president's immune acts, that is, official acts as president, in order to prove other crimes that are primarily private activity. That is the Bragg situation. So in the Bragg situation, you wouldn't necessarily have counts of the indictment thrown out, but what the court would, I think, probably say, I don't know that Merchan is going to say this, but I think ultimately the ruling will be that the case has to be redone because the district attorney offered important evidence over Trump's objection that was not permissible under the immunity principles. And they made a very vigorous argument about immunity. The state, I think, recklessly went ahead with it anyway. So what Bragg wants to argue is that, yes, we made a little mistake here, but it was all harmless error. And what Trump is trying to argue is that the indictment should be thrown out. And I think probably neither one of those things is right. I think what would have to happen is the case would have to be, if the state chooses to do it, the case would have to be, you know, basically redone without that evidence in it, which, by the way, Bragg didn't need that evidence. It was foolish of him to go forward with it. In Jack Smith's case in Washington, you know, I don't like that case, but at least, you know, from Smith's perspective, he has to use that evidence. He doesn't have a case without it. Whereas here, Bragg kind of gratuitously did this, and he's being hoist on his own petard because the Trump people, you know, objected up, down, and sideways to it. And Judge Merchan obviously didn't understand the issue in the trial, because one of the things he said, you know, one of the official acts that Trump is saying he performed was some of the tweets that he issued about some of the allegations that were being made by Stormy Daniels and Michael Cohen. And the judge said, you can't tell me that he has, that the state can't prove something that he tweeted publicly that, you know, millions of people saw because it was on his Twitter feed. And that suggested to me, as I wrote last week, that the judge seemed to think that this was a confidentiality issue. And of course, like, if something's confidential, but then you blab it to a million people, yes, you can waive your confidentiality right. But this was not a confidentiality issue. This was Trump's right under the immunity doctrine not to have that offered against him as evidence in the trial. So I think that Merchan didn't even understand the fire that he was playing with, because he didn't understand the issue. But in any event, I think what would ultimately happen is that if the state wanted to retry the case, they could, but they'd have to keep that evidence out. But in the meantime, Annie, it would take a long time to get there, because if Merchan rules in Bragg's favor, as he has reliably done at every juncture of the trial, Trump would then be able to appeal that immediately to the appellate division in New York, and then ultimately to the highest court in New York. And if he still didn't have satisfaction because it's a federal issue, he could appeal it to the Supreme Court of the United States. That could take a very long time. And Trump's point is that the Supreme Court has said that if you have an immunity issue, that has to be fully litigated before you proceed with everything else, because immunity goes to the question of whether it's proper to have the trial or the court proceeding in the first place. So Trump would be entitled, I think, to do all of those appeals before, if the case was still viable after, you know, if for some reason all these appellate courts upheld the conviction, Merchan could then impose sentence. I don't think they're going to uphold the conviction. I think they'll throw out the convictions. But let's say the ruling goes in Bragg's favor. It would still take a very long time to get there, and Merchan would not be allowed in the meantime to impose sentence until all that litigation was done.
Oof, man, that's a lot. Andy McCarthy with us right now. So is there still a possibility, with all of that being said, is there still a possibility that Merchan tries to sentence Donald Trump on September 18th?
There's a possibility, but I think he would be stopped from doing that. And okay. I actually think, you know, look, he's never publicly parted company with Bragg throughout the case. Mm-hmm. And Bragg has basically now sent him this letter that basically says, you know, look, we looked at the tea leaves here. We're not going to object if you postpone the sentence. So he knows he's in the wrong. And the way the letter is couched, they say, you know, we're really just trying to be on the safe side here, because there's a lot of resources that have to be expended in order to have proceedings in this case because of public safety and logistics. And we'd hate to see all these public resources wasted by having to plan a sentencing that ends up not happening because Trump appeals. So what Bragg is basically drawing for Merchan is a kind of a roadmap where Merchan can say, I'm putting off the sentencing in the interest of public safety and preserving resources, without admitting that I have to put the sentencing off because I idiotically let this evidence in that shouldn't have come into the case.
It's like trying to rebake a cake, but this time without the sugar and the flour. No one's eating
that
cake. Andy
right.
McCarthy, the last question I have for you is regarding sentencing. I mean, maybe before these last developments here, just how outrageous would it really be for Merchan to impose a jail sentence for these crimes towards Donald Trump? Like, on the scale of 0 to 10, where are we at on where that would be an applicable, responsible sentence for this crime in this situation?
Yeah, probably 11 or 12.
wondering.
You know, look, I think that what you have to, as a matter of just like due process and equal protection of the law, no one who was not named Donald Trump would have been charged in this case. And the prosecutor, this is a prosecutor, a progressive prosecutor in Manhattan, whose MO is to plead serious crimes down to misdemeanors. Here, he pled what at most was a misdemeanor. I think he would have had trouble proving the misdemeanor. And he pled that into 34 felonies. And he did it with like 8-year-old conduct to try to get around the statute of limitation. I mean, it's like so obvious that this is a political prosecution. And then, even though the charge is falsification of business records, which is pretty puny as felonies go, they pitched it to the jury as Trump successfully conspired to steal the 2016 election. And Merchan bought that interpretation of it and went all along the way with Bragg on this. So to me, how do you, if you're going to say this case was really about Trump stealing the world's most important political office, how do you then say, and we'll sentence him to 10 hours of probation? You know, I mean, stealing the presidency is like the crime of the century, right? So he's got to give him, I think he's got to give him a prison sentence. And I think his incentive is high to give him a prison sentence because Trump isn't actually going to prison. You know, under New York law, he's virtually certain to get bail pending appeal. So it's not like Trump, you know, Merchan was going to pronounce sentence and then the cops would slap cuffs on Trump and cart him off to Rikers Island, right? That was not what was going to happen. It's going to be a year or two, even without the immunity stuff, it was going to be a year or two while Trump's appeal played out. So to my mind, since this is only political theater, there's no way that Trump was actually going to prison. Perversely, I think that increases Merchan's incentive to impose a stiff prison sentence because it's not like it's really going to happen, right? Mm. This was only for political messaging in the 7-week run-up to the election.
Man, it's really infuriating. I bet for you that really understands the legalese of all of this even more so. It's just absolutely infuriating. Real quick, he can't pardon himself if he becomes the president for this crime because it's a state crime?
Yeah, he would have to depend on Governor Kathy Hochul to do that. Only the governor, in some states, they actually have a pardon board, but I think in New York, the governor has pardon power. I wouldn't hold my breath if I were Trump on that one. But I would assure people, though, that I think what would happen, even if like they tried to impose a prison sentence on him and then execute it while his appeal was pending, meaning try to put him in prison, I think the Justice Department would go into federal court and argue that under the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution, the state can't interfere with the legitimate functioning of the federal government. So what would happen is Trump's sentencing would be delayed until after his presidential term was over if he won the election. So just to put everyone at ease, what happened in New York is a debacle. It's a terrible development for the criminal justice system. But President Trump is not going to Attica anytime soon.
Man, you've put a lot of people at ease, and you've also disappointed a lot of people with that statement, Andy McCarthy. That's the way of the times right now. We appreciate you, Andy. Thank you for giving us some of your afternoon. We look forward to having you back.
Thanks so much, Annie.
You as well. Bye-bye. He's a contributing editor at National Review. He's the host of The McCarthy Report. It's a podcast that I encourage you to subscribe to and check out. The McCarthy Report, Fox News contributor as well. How many people are crying right now because he just said Trump's not getting hauled off in cuffs to Rikers? what did he say? Complicated business. Sorry to keep you waiting. Man. And as he said, even if it were to happen, he won the re-election, he would have to like serve his term and then they'd pick it up from there. Okay. All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about our coverage of the DNC convention here on the show. And how much are you craving to hear? I got clips galore. You guys want to hear AOC? I got it. You want Kamala? I got it. You want Hillary? I got it. Why do I have all of these clips? Oh my gosh. I don't want it. I don't want it. But maybe you do. Go vote in the YouTube live chat poll and tell us, how much of this convention are you trying to take in? We'll be right back. Don't go away.
No kidding.
I'm not sure. I wish we would have had the beginning of that phrase because he emphatically goes, quote. And then he goes in to say he just falls apart, as he is apt to do when he is speaking. One of the reasons why I believe he is not running for a second term, I don't think he's got the mental capacity to do it anymore. When the DNC opened last night and Ashley Biden came out, I thought Ashley Biden did a great job, all things considered. I thought she looked great. I thought she spoke very well. I always try to picture myself being somebody who loves these people and consume it that way, just so I can kind of try to put myself in someone else's shoes. Of course, watching the RNC convention, which by all accounts was done magnificently well, the people on MSNBC, which is where I consumed most of it. I was on vacation, but I was tuning into MSNBC. This is how good I felt about it, to watch them lament how well the convention was going for Republicans. You could tell that there was enthusiasm. The room was electric. That's what they keep saying. But for the Democrats, I want to try to consume it the way they might consume it. And when everything that the Democrat Party currently stands for is fear of Donald Trump, that's not really a joyful place to be, because everything is preceded by fear of the orange man. And I don't feel like that breeds happiness when like-minded people like that get together. That's been my experience. Watching last night and seeing Ashley Biden talk, she starts off, do we have a clip of her talking? I don't think we do. She starts off discussing a memory that she has with her father from when she was 8. And everybody who's been paying attention for a while leans in and goes, what? What's this? What? What? What are you talking about? And then she goes to tell a story that I'm sure in the context of having a father who travels all the time and is always busy elsewhere, this was an endearing moment. But she was talking about turning, I think, 8 years old, and how she said her mom said, everybody get in the car. Jill puts everybody in the car and they jump in the car and they drive to the Amtrak station and they go out there and they whip out a cake. Joe Biden gets off the Amtrak train. They sing happy birthday. They celebrate her birthday. And then he had to get right back on the next train on the other side of the platform to go back to work. And I felt like that was a tragic story. That did not feel to me. Listen, I understand the value of a father who takes the time to make happen what you can make happen. But there are a lot of stories about the Biden family where his ambition for career far supersedes his presence as a father. And I was thinking to myself, a birthday cake on an Amtrak platform, That's the moment. That's the thing that you recall and want to tell everybody who's watching right now about your dad. I mean, I guess it's just kind of maybe you had to be there to understand the impact of that moment. I thought Jill Biden looked stunning. Her dress was beautiful. She looked beautiful. She championed Joe's existence as a human. That was pretty much it. She made a couple comments at the end championing Kamala and saying, like, now we got to get behind her. So she didn't completely punt on that, but it was all about Joe's relationship with people in his life. And that was it. And then she starts talking about how strong of a decision it was for Joe Biden, you know, the moment when he decided that he was going to step down. And I think that most people understand that that's not how that went. Are you watching the DNC convention? Did you take all of this in for yourself? The convention that's supposed to be about joy was last night capped off mostly by a very angry, yelly Joe Biden. I'd be curious to know what you think. You can vote in today's poll. Yes, you're watching. No, but you are interested in the highlights, which we can certainly provide for you here on our station and on this show. Or no, you're not interested at all. I mean, I think it goes without saying that we all have a professional obligation to watch it. But where do you put your interest level here?
Yeah, beyond that, I feel like I need to watch it. I am interested in the highlights. I would like to see the next morning. I like waking up and seeing if anything interesting happened.
Brad?
There are certain speakers that I want to watch. I'm not interested in watching the whole thing, but there are certain speakers that I want to watch. Like last night, I was gaming with my friends, like, Joe Biden's going to speak. I got to get off, and then proceeded to wait an extra 20 minutes for him to get on stage.
I waited an hour. It was a long time. It was a very long time. Let us know what you think. We've got a lot of people weighing in on this today. Let's see here. Charlie says, H-E double hockey sticks, no. That is a direct quote. I don't know what that means. Shelley said, nope, can't stand the lies. And Dirk said, no, interested in the highlights. Highlights. Ha ha. We'll be right back.
No kidding.
I'm not sure. I wish we would have had the beginning of that phrase because he emphatically goes, quote, and then he goes in to say he just falls apart, as he is apt to do when he is speaking. One of the reasons why I believe he is not running for a second term, I don't think he's got the mental capacity to do it anymore. When the DNC opened last night and Ashley Biden came out, I thought Ashley Biden did a great job. All things considered, I thought she looked great. I thought she spoke very well. I always try to picture myself being somebody who loves these people and consume it that way, just so I can kind of try to put myself in someone else's shoes. Of course, watching the RNC convention, which by all accounts was done magnificently well, the people on MSNBC, which is where I consumed most of it. I was on vacation, but I was tuning into MSNBC. This is how good I felt about it, to watch them lament how well the convention was going for Republicans. You could tell that there was enthusiasm. The room was electric. That's what they keep saying. But for the Democrats, I want to try to consume it the way they might consume it. And when everything that the Democrat Party currently stands for is fear of Donald Trump, that's not really a joyful place to be, because everything is preceded by fear of the orange man. And I don't feel like that breeds happiness when like-minded people like that get together. That's been my experience watching last night and seeing Ashley Biden talk. She starts off. Do we have a clip of her talking? I don't think we do. She starts off discussing a memory that she has with her father from when she was 8. And everybody who's been paying attention for a while leans in and goes, what? What's this? What? What? What are you talking about? And then she goes to tell a story that I'm sure in the context of having a father who travels all the time and is always busy elsewhere, this was an endearing moment. But she was talking about turning, I think, 8 years old, and how her mom said, everybody get in the car. Jill puts everybody in the car and they jump in the car and they drive to the Amtrak station and they go out there and they whip out a cake. Joe Biden gets off the Amtrak train. They sing happy birthday. They celebrate her birthday. And then he had to get right back on the next train on the other side of the platform to go back to work. And I felt like that was a tragic story. That did not feel to me. Listen, I understand the value of a father who takes the time to make happen what you can make happen. But there are a lot of stories about the Biden family where his ambition for career far supersedes his presence as a father. And I was thinking to myself, a birthday cake on an Amtrak platform, That's the moment. That's the thing that you recall and want to tell everybody who's watching right now about your dad. I mean, I guess it's just kind of maybe you had to be there to understand the impact of that moment. I thought Jill Biden looked stunning. Her dress was beautiful. She looked beautiful. She championed Joe's existence as a human. That was pretty much it. She made a couple comments at the end championing Kamala and saying, like, now we got to get behind her. So she didn't completely punt on that, but it was all about Joe's relationship with people in his life. And that was it. And then she starts talking about how strong of a decision it was for Joe Biden, you know, the moment when he decided that he was going to step down. And I think that most people understand that that's not how that went. Are you watching the DNC convention? Did you take all of this in for yourself? The convention that's supposed to be about joy was last night capped off mostly by a very angry, yelly Joe Biden. I'd be curious to know what you think. You can vote in today's poll. Yes, you're watching. No, but you are interested in the highlights, which we can certainly provide for you here on our station and on this show. Or no, you're not interested at all. I mean, I think it goes without saying that we all have a professional obligation to watch it. But where do you put your interest level here?
Yeah, beyond that, I feel like I need to watch it. I am interested in the highlights. I would like to see the next morning. I like waking up and seeing if anything interesting happened.
Brad?
There are certain speakers that I want to watch. I'm not interested in watching the whole thing, but there are certain speakers that I want to watch. Like last night I was gaming with my friends, like Joe Biden's going to speak. I got to get off, and then proceeded to wait an extra 20 minutes for him to get on stage.
I waited an hour. It was a long time. It was a very long time. Let us know what you think. We've got a lot of people weighing in on this today. Let's see here. Charlie says, H-E double hockey sticks, no. That is a direct quote. I don't know what that means. Shelly said, nope, can't stand the lies. And Dirk said, no, interested in the highlights. Highlights, haha. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, it's such a clutch offseason pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
You fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.